You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, and I'm joined today by Scott Merkin, MLB.com's beat writer for the Sox. And Scott, the White Sox were quiet at the deadline. There was some scuttlebutt leading into it about what they might or might not do as far as some of the veterans on their roster. I'm sure there are opportunities out there to, you know, maybe move some guys, but I guess the returns just weren't enough for Rick Hahn and company to be swayed, huh?
Yeah, Anthony, I think, you know, in the difference from last year at that time where, you know, they were kind of starting this reshaping, rebuilding, whatever you want to call it, they needed to get rid of some contracts where, you know, the assets were kind of dying down, where they had to move them to get something good in return and start this youthful base going forward. And that kind of led them, you know, losing some of that money off the payroll, kind of gave them the freedom to go after Jose Abreu in the offseason and, you know, make the highest bid to get him. And this year they didn't have to do that. You know, they've made good strides this year. They're probably still not going to be a playoff team this year, but they've made, you know, good strides forward. And there was no push. There's no imperative push that you had to trade a John Danks or you had to trade Gordon Beckham or you had to trade Diaz or Vizcaíno. If the deal was there, sure, you're going to look at those, you know, those guys, those veterans, because you have some young guys, especially like at Gordon's position, for example. There's Micah Johnson, Marcus Semien, Carlos Sanchez, even Tyler Saladino behind him. But while, you know, there was no push to get it done before the non-waiver deadline on July 31st, it doesn't mean something won't happen, including a guy like Adam Dunn during August waiver period.
Well, yeah, and maybe Dunn has some value now as a pitcher after his performance on
That was literally one of the best moments of the year, I think. Just
I was
going to
say, you covered a lot of games, Merk. Is that, where does that rank on the entertainment scale for you?
You know, different. I don't want to cheapen the World Series win in the blackout game of 2008 when they beat the Twins 1-0 on Tomy's homer. But just in terms of pure fun entertainment at the end of a 15-0 game where there was really no story except for John Danks getting hit around, I mean, it was exceedingly entertaining. And you've covered Adam. You know what a good guy he is and how much fun he has playing the game. I mean, don't get it wrong. He works hard. He wants to win. But this is a guy who's going to go out there and not make a mockery of it, but really have fun with it and really believes, I think, in his heart that if he went at it, could probably be a pitcher. He told us after he pitched that he probably had another 10 miles an hour velocity-wise in him, but he was just going easy, just trying to get him through the inning and that kind of thing. And I think because of the fact that it was done, you know, Leury Garcia pitched earlier in the year out of necessity. John Baker pitched for the Cubs out of necessity. I know he was a funny quote after that game, too, but just because it is the character that was done, it was one of the more memorable moments I've had covering the team for 13 years.
Well, he's got that old Texas high school quarterback arm, of course. To me, the best moment about it was, I think it was Chris Conroy behind the plate, right? And he calls one of the first pitches, he calls a ball, and Dunn kind of snaps his glove.
I loved it, yeah. Tremendous. It was the second pitch. He got a called strike. And the second one was called the ball, and he snapped the glove, and he told us after, he's like, that's a strike. He goes, I'm up there hitting. That's a strike. You can book it, no doubt about it. So, you know, he was staying true to form. But just the whole thing he did, you know, and I thought Adrian Beltre had a great quote afterwards where he said that if he hit him, they couldn't charge him out because Dunn's too big to go after. So it was just kind of a fun moment. And, you know, it hasn't been the easiest of 4 years for Adam hitting-wise in Chicago. Yeah. He's had some highs of highs and some very lows of lows, and he's handled it all very professionally and very well, kept that same positive attitude. And he really, you know, did the service for the team, too, pitching that ninth inning because, they had two games in 3 days where they had allowed 16 runs and just saved a bullpen arm when you might need him in a close game coming up.
Yeah. Well, in all seriousness about Dunn, you know what he is at this point.
Exactly.
But you can see the value there is a potential platoon bat for a contender. I mean, what's your gut tell you about this month here and the possibility of him moving on, by month's end?
Well, don't you think too, Anthony, that at this point, you know, guys, as it goes towards September, teams that are on the border, even like the White Sox, who I think, you know, have hovered around five back at the second wild card, even though they're like five or six teams back, teams will start to decide whether they're in or out. And injuries will pop up, and you'll know you can sit there and say, hey, you know what? We need a left-handed bat who's just going to hit the ball out of the park for us, and he can get on base, too. We need that guy. That's what we're missing in this life. We have good pitching. We have good defense, but we're a little short offensively, and he could be the guy. So I think there's a better chance of him moving, you know, with him making $15 million in this last year of his four-year $56 million deal. There's a better chance of him moving with less time left, with just a month left or whatever it ends up becoming a month and a half than it was before. before the non-waiver trade deadline.
Yeah. Well, you alluded to this earlier, Merck, but the reason Dunn was in that game in the first place was obviously a game that got out of hand and a game that Johnny Danks started, and his performance since the All-Star break has been a source of concern there, I'm sure. I mean, four starts, the ERA has jumped basically a point from 3.99 to 4.92. Says his shoulder is fine, but what are you seeing from Danks? Who there's another guy that, there was a possibility to maybe move him before the deadline. I know that's not something they were geared towards doing, but what have you seen from him the last few times out?
It's a strange phenomenon with him. He struggled at the beginning of the year. wasn't bad, but wasn't great. And he had a real rough start against Houston in Houston around May 17th or 18th. He gave up three home runs and got knocked around. Dominguez hit two way out. And then the next 10 starts, he was great. I mean, he was literally one of the better pitchers going in that stretch. I think 9 of his 10 starts or 8 of his 10 starts were quality. And then since the All-Star break, he had been knocked around. So I think the thing with John is it's all location. And, he doesn't have the velocity to overpower a guy if he makes a mistake in the middle of the zone. And you watch some replays from that game where Dunn pitched, the 16-0 loss, and the balls that were hit out, he gave up four home runs. They were pretty much, center cut. They were bad location. The guy works hard, and he's a valuable piece to have in this day and age, where you have guys who can make 30 starts, 200 innings, win 10 to 15 games, and their ERA is somewhere between, it's higher this year, but maybe 3.8 to 4. And that's a valuable piece in a winning team. Maybe more valuable to the Sox a year or two from now, but could be valuable to a team in contention right now. I don't think he's hurt. I think he's fine. He's, he said it over and over. They wouldn't push him out there if he wasn't. I don't think he's tired. I just think his location has slipped, and he doesn't have the stuff to get by when he makes mistakes like that.
Yeah. Another guy who, coming back from an injury, I know he was hit by a pitch the other day, but down in AAA, Avisiel Garcia, who's a guy who you didn't expect to be even on the radar this season after that torn labrum and avulsion fracture back in April. You figure his season's over at that point, but he's rehabbed himself fairly quickly. He's hit pretty well at Charlotte. Again, I know he was hit by a pitch the other day. Doesn't seem like that was anything serious. I know he hasn't played in the field yet, but is there a possibility of him coming up to big league club, before the end of the season?
Yeah, I think he could be coming up before the end of August. In reality,
yeah.
And that, it's a testament to his hard work. I talked to him back for, believe it or not, a Father's Day story, just about being with his family more. And he was hurt, and I casually asked him, you still, what are you going to do the rest of the year? He's like, well, I'm still hoping I'm going to come back, and that was kind of shocking. And to the Sox credit, they never pushed it. They always stayed with the line that he was projected to be out for the season, and that's what we're going with. And if something happens otherwise, that'll be great. And it's just his hard work. It's hard work and the work of the White Sox training staff and the work with Todd Steverson, working with him what he can hitting wise. And he started 8-for-15 in that rehab assignment, so it's kind of like I guess riding a bike, just getting right back on again. And he was hitting, and it's huge just to get him the at bats. This is an important development year for him. He's had experience. He's played in the World Series, for God's sake. But to miss almost an entire season, April 9th was when he had that dive in Colorado, and to have missed the entire season would have been not a step back, but certainly not a step forward in terms of his development. So even getting at bats for 5 weeks, where I'm sure he'll play every day or as much as the comeback allows him, is going to be an important plus to get him going. Because having him and Jose Abreu in the middle of that lineup next year is going to be a huge boon for the White Sox offense.
Yeah, and we know, we see at the deadline how difficult it is to acquire a power bat like that. And so, even in retrospect, I know he's been hurt this year, but you can look back to last year's deadline trade of Jake Peavy, and I think they unloaded about $20 million, right, in that Jake Peavy deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great trade. I mean, Peavy, was a solid part of the rotation here for the Sox, but he just didn't figure in what they were doing going forward.
Right.
And like you said, they moved money on top of it. And they got a guy in Garcia who, didn't look like he was available for a long time from the Tigers there. They also added a couple nice young pitchers, and Wendell Kinn and this kid Frankie Montas, who is in our latest ranking, kind of jumped up in the prospects there. So it was a good trade overall from Rick, but, just getting those young core guys, he added Garcia there. He added Eaton in a three-team deal that moved Hector Santiago. He added Matt Davidson, who struggled in Charlotte, but they still have hope for him. And, you brought in Abreu, who is obviously the heart and soul beyond the core. And you have Connor Gillespie, who they got in spring training a couple of years ago. So they've slowly but surely kind of pieced this thing together. And I think, they're probably even a little ahead of schedule this year, although you never throw away a season. But, you know, this is a team that could end up, you know, close to 500 this year, and it may be even better if they go on a run, or I guess a little worse if they fall below. But nonetheless, they won 63 games last year, and they're making strides. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and they're trying to assemble a lineup that can beat you, you know, in multiple ways. You think about the speed of Eaton and the power of a Garcia and a Abreu. But how about Abreu, Mark? I mean, we can't seem to do one of these podcasts without talking about him in some capacity, but he has his second Player of the Month award in his rookie season, first player to ever have two of those awards in his rookie year.
Right.
He's had, what, a Rookie of the Month award all but every month but May, correct?
Right, right. And he was hurt May, so he can't do much in that one. I mean, you know, unfortunately for Tanaka with his arm issues, but and nothing against Springer over in Houston, but you can give Abreu the Rookie of the Year award right now. I mean,
yeah.
Whether
yeah.
Then you debate, you know, is Abreu a rookie? Was Ichiro a rookie? But he is, by MLB standards, he's a rookie. So he's won that. I think the more interesting question is, depending on where they finish, how does he figure in the MVP award? Because there's arguably, you know, I love Miguel Cabrera. He's a great player to watch. He's fun to watch. I was talking to Eaton about how he jokes around. He's always talking with players over in first base and seems to really know. And, you know, I've found kind of a home in Detroit and enjoys the game. And he's a huge piece to Detroit, but you take him off Detroit and that team probably survives. You take Abreu off the Sox this year and they're back where they were last year. So, again, it just depends on how they look. But I think he's kind of even surpassed the Rookie of the Year status and has put himself in AL MVP talk. I mean, the guy hit in 39 of 40 games. I don't care if you're a rookie or if you were Rod Carew or if you're Ichiro or Derek Jeter in his prime. 39 of 40 games is really difficult to do. And two, you know, in an 18-game hitting streak and a 21-game hitting streak with one missed game in between. And the thing is, he's learning. You know, he's getting better as he goes. He's learning the strike zone more. He's not chasing pitches outside as much. He's taking his walks a little bit more. I think the next adjustment is going to be that they're going to pitch around him. You know, he's going to have to pick and choose his spots because there's going to be spots where they just don't throw to him. But he's been, I mean, not to overstate baseball, but he's been a godsend for this organization. I mean, really,
yeah.
I don't know where the process would be if they did not get Jose Abreu. And think about where teams like Houston or Boston or Colorado would be if they had got Abreu and they were in the mix too.
Yeah. Certainly, you know, what I found interesting is the attention to detail this guy puts in his routine. You had a story
mentioning
that he requested to move from the first group in batting practice to the third group. It was just more of a comfort factor for him, I guess.
Yeah, who thinks about that? I mean, it's funny because I did a lot of stuff leading up to the Hall of Fame, you know, when Frank Thomas was inducted. And the standard thing you heard besides just his amazing talent and just his great batting eye was that he had a routine and it didn't change. You know, if he was 0 for 20, it didn't change. If he was 15 for 15, which he was at one point in his career, it didn't change either. You know, I mean, he always did the same thing. He followed a routine. And Abreu, as you said in that story, he talked about how it starts from how much when he gets up in the morning to when he gets to the park to, you know, Todd Steverson talked about how he kind of walks the field. It's very interesting. Just he's got a specific regimen. They've slowed him down a little after the ankle injury in May, but, you know, let him do his thing. And he's just a professional. And, you know, the one thing they pointed out, you look at a guy like Vicieto who came in and he's not really hit stride since he's been here consistently. Abreu came in with a lot of experience and he was, what, 26 when he came in. And, you know, just a good player already there. You know, a lot of people say it was probably going to be the best hitter that came out of Cuba, and you're talking about some good players that came out of there. And, again, it's just one season, but he's been everything they could have hoped for and more so far.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Thomas's induction. I think Abreu might be the only White Sox past or present that he didn't thank. He mentioned just about every former teammate he's ever had, hadn't he?
Yeah. You know, there's still an unofficial official count of that. I think we got to about three or four of us who were there ran through that speech four or five times, and we came up with, I believe it was 139 names. And that's not counting. That was just in the, what did he call it, the verbal montage.
Right.
He came up 139 names. That's not counting the people in the organization and the trainers and the people from Oakland and the people from Toronto and his friends that he thanked and his family and his wife and his five kids. That was just counting the players he ran off there, Brian Anderson, Melito Perez. I'm going to miss, I'm not going to list all 139 right now, but
well,
you know, it was crazy.
He cut about 50 names off the speech at the last minute because he said this is ridiculous. But
I mean, that's amazing. It's amazing to think there were another 50 who didn't make the cut, who, you know, after the 139 that he threw out there. But a very emotional speech. You know,
it was.
He kind of lost it the minute he got up there, and he told us afterwards he knew that was going to happen. And, you know, meant a lot. When he had a great line about his dad, talking about that his dad said, you could be anything you want to be, just go after it, and that's what he did. And another great line from Walt Hriniak, who was really his kind of guru, you know, his hitting teacher, that, you know, you can be good or you can be spectacular. I'm paraphrasing all these, obviously, but that's what, you know, and Frank chose to be spectacular, and he earned it. It was a really cool experience being at the Hall of Fame. I was there with, you know, my brothers when we were younger, but just to be there for the induction and see that city come alive. And Main Street is one of those streets that, like, by itself in a city kind of survives, you know. I mean, different way, but, like, you know, you name, like, a Bourbon Street or a Las Vegas Strip, and Main Street is Cooperstown pretty much. And great class, too, besides Frank, just a great class to see.
It was a great class, great speech by the Big Hurt. And I'm sure you'll be back at Cooperstown, Merck, if the Eagles ever play a concert there. But
well, they belong in every Hall of Fame they can get to, Anthony.
We'll see about that. We'll see. But I want to thank Scott Merkin for joining us. I want to thank you for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extra Chicago White Sox Edition.